and welcome to North Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and I don't know if Tim's coming or not. I think he is, but we'll find out pretty soon here. Tim Kern's ordinarily with us. We'll see. This is kind of a weird Monday for sure. I'm trying to go to the sports for today listings because games have been postponed today for kind of a very strange reason. And I don't know if I can find that for us or not. We'll take a look. But anyway, we do have a good lineup this evening. We're going to be talking with Max Cerullo, who is the Newburyport Daily News sports editor, and he's going to update us on Cape Ann League sports. We'll talk with sports historian and golf writer Gary Larrabee later on. Check in with sports journalist Mike Grenier, and we have a feature on St. John's Prep Lacrosse tri-captain Patrick Atkins, among other things as well. So looking forward to that. I want to see if I can find, see if the Salem News has an update on today's schedules, because I believe it was Hamilton Wenham canceling their games today at home, or at least postponing them, I guess, due to the heat. And that's a new one on me. It was, I believe, when I was in Essex earlier today, 96 degrees. But I'm not sure that's a threat to health. Not to kids anyway. Let me just see if they have anything up here. No, they don't have any of the postponements on the Salem News. But kind of interesting, so we'll have to go to Twitter and check that out. I found that kind of weird. I went to high school in Texas and played baseball in Texas, played football. We used to have the double sessions in August, and yeah, it was hot, but didn't postpone due to the heat. So anyway, I don't know. We'll have to find out. Maybe you have an opinion on that, and you can let us know. You can email us at msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com. Let's just check out Twitter here. If I can figure that out. Social media. There we go. Twitter. Oh, and it was kind of cool this weekend. I was talking to Joe Lucido, who was the assistant DPW director in Gloucester, but he's also an official in the Northeastern Conference and the Cape Ann League, both in football and in baseball. And he was umpiring a game, I guess, in Rockport this weekend when it rained. I think it was Friday. And the game, I guess they got the game in, but it was Rockport and Hamilton won them, I believe. And at the end of the game, North Reading, I'm not sure which, but anyway, the visiting team started to go up in the right field there at Evans Field, and they started sliding down the right field slope there in the rain and the mud. And the Rockport kids were watching that. They said, well, we can do better than that. So they started sliding around the bases in the mud. And then I guess the visiting coach did the same thing. And, of course, John Parisi, the baseball coach and director of athletics at Rockport High School, did the same thing. He started sliding around in the mud. And apparently both teams got together afterward and took some pictures of their mud and soap covered uniforms together. So that's really cool and exciting to hear that. I guess we've been cooped up a little too long. But, you know, that's how it used to be. Used to enjoy getting out there playing in the mud and the rain, whether it was baseball or football or whatever, especially on a warm day. So I'm reading from Gloucester Daily Times Sports. Shane Keogh goes deep to right to cut the Gloucester lead to 5-4. Marblehead just had a runner tossed out at second on a wild pitch. That play is now the difference in the game. Two outs in the bottom of the seventh. That's Marblehead and Gloucester baseball. Let's see if we have anything else in it. So that's 5-4 Gloucester late in that game. Top of the third at Fenwick. St. Mary's and their opponent are 1-1, according to Matt Williams. Bishop Fenwick with a 6-1 lead after one. I don't know what that is. Nick Giannino covering that for the Salem News. Just going through this thing kind of quickly here as we get ready to call in Max Cerullo. Boys lacrosse, Fenwick and St. Mary's, 14-14, going to overtime at Manning. Wow, that's quite something in lacrosse. I don't see anything else here. Well, why don't we take a break here, and then we'll check in with Max Cerullo. Oh, here it is. Bishop Fenwick wins over St. Mary's in boys lacrosse, 15-14 in overtime, despite six goals from Zach Barden. So apparently Fenwick beats St. Mary's 15-14 in overtime in boys lacrosse. And that's the first final we have. Now, I know that the Bruins are playing right now, so we're not going to belabor this any longer. We're going to get right to it. And let's take our first break of the evening, and we'll check in with Max Cerullo, the sports editor at the Newburyport Daily News. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell, of course, always helping out. And I don't know what to expect, whether Tim's coming or not. So why don't we take a break, and then we'll check in with Mac.
Did you grow up in an alcoholic or dysfunctional home? Were you abused or suffered childhood trauma at the hands of a parent or caregiver? Have you tried self-help or counseling without success? ACA can help. ACA is a 12-step recovery program for adults whose lives are affected as a result of being raised in an alcoholic or dysfunctional family. To find out how others like you have found healing from traumatic childhoods, go to adultchildren.org. That's adultchildren.org.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're joined now by Max Cerullo, who is the sports editor at the Newburyport Daily News. And I guess I interrupted you, Mac. What is it you're having for dinner? What are you cooking tonight?
Oh, don't worry about that. We're making good stuff in the Cerullo household.
Okay. All right, sounds good, man. And, geez, I hate to bother you, but, you know, first things first, man. We got to talk about sports. You know, Mac, I'm looking at, first of all, just in general, the incredible positive outcomes that are happening right now in high school sports with this lifting of the veil, so to speak. And maybe just kind of a general comment on what you've observed since the beginning of, I don't know, whatever it was, the middle of April or May, and how things have gone along in general.
Yeah, this spring season, it's been night and day compared to, honestly, even compared to the fall two season. Like, it's really crazy just how quickly things change. Like, you know, the pandemic in general has really, you know, with vaccinations picking up speed, you know, I don't wake up worried that, oh, I'm going to get a heads up that, like, somebody's, you know, some team has gone into a 2-week pause like I have most of this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, it has happened infrequently. So I don't want to minimize that, you know, it's obviously we're still kind of, you know, it's still happening out there, but it does really feel different than from most of this year. It's been certainly a big improvement in terms of just the whole vibe. It's a lot more fun to be out there now, and you know, the kids seem like they're really enjoying it. They've been through so much. It's been such a tough year, so it's been really nice that they're kind of getting a good send off. Whereas last year, obviously, those seniors got nothing at all.
Yeah,
really,
right. Yeah. Well, you know, and there's been a shift, of course, from having to concentrate on those outside things as well as the sports. So for both the coaches and the kids, they're able to just, okay, let's play sports. And, you know, I was just mentioning one of the things, a couple of things, actually, and this is kind of off base a little bit, but up in Rockport, there was a baseball game last weekend, and I don't know whether it was North Reading or Hamilton, one of them who was there, but it rained at the end of the game, and the visiting team decided to go do some mudslides out in right field at Evans Field in Rockport. And so the Rockport kids said, well, we can top that. So they started running around the bases, sliding in the mud. So the visiting baseball coach said, I can top that. He did it in right field. And then John Parisi, the AD, at Rockport did the same thing. And it just shows you, man, everybody's just so happy to be out there. And it's reminiscent of many years ago when kids would go out there and play in the mud. So it's a brand new, it's exuberant feeling, I guess.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, there's no tradition like rain delay hijinks. You know, it's well documented that, you know, those guys need to pass the time, and they can get pretty creative. So that's really cool. I'm glad those, you know, kids and, well, the coaches and administrators, yeah, and all of them got to get enough fun. That's really cool.
Yeah, and apparently, according to Joe Lucido, he's an official. He's an umpire, and he's an official in football also. He's the assistant DPW director in Gloucester. He's got a kid who plays at Rockport. And he said that even after the game, he said, this is occurrence now, he said after the game that both teams got together shoulder to shoulder, and they let people take pictures and videos of the teams together. So, I mean, it's just like, boy, if only the adults could take a lesson from that.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Cape Ann League website, Mac, and let's start with Newburyport, because the Newburyport High School spring sports teams look like they're having just an amazingly successful season. Let's start with baseball. What are your observations?
They're good. They're real good. And you know what? We're just continuing a trend that we saw throughout the fall and the winter too. You know, Newburyport just across the board is having an outstanding athletic. Their senior class, their junior class, just very, very strong athletically, and the baseball team is just reflective of that. Great pitching. Jack Fellner, he was the area's best relief pitcher as a freshman 2 years ago. He had like an ERA of like 0.4 or something, excuse me, 0.54, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he comes out as a junior, he's been the ace. He's just been awesome. Not super overpowering, but just has gotten the job done. And they got this new kid, Owen Tunk, who's a big pitcher, it's his first season of high school ball, obviously, because he didn't get to play as a freshman last year. And, you know, he's been great too. So between those two in the rotation and, just a really strong lineup, you know, up and down the list, you've got, you know, Ryan Archer, Jack Spudgel, Jacob Buntempo. He's been fantastic. Great, really big power too. He's hit a bunch of home runs this year. Lucas Stallard, another big one. Pretty much their whole lineup is really good, honestly. They're a very, well-balanced team,
mm-hmm,
and, one that's well-equipped to do well. Obviously baseball in the postseason, you can never really make any too hard and fast predictions, but, you know, they have for sure what it takes. And, down the line, I mean, girls tennis is undefeated. They're awesome. Girls lacrosse is undefeated. They're awesome. That's not really a surprise. Those programs have been really rolling the last few years. And, across the board, like I said,
yeah.
The boys lacrosse team, I should mention too, also doing fantastic. They practically brought back their whole team from 2 years ago. So, you know, they were as well prepared to, you know, kind of hit the ground running as anyone. So.
Yeah. And of course, Catherine Batchelder always has the girls up there in girls lacrosse. I mean, that's almost a given. Interestingly enough, it seems to me that, a real challenge in several sports has been Hamilton Wenham. They're challenging in baseball. And other than that, in baseball, man, it looks like it's Newburyport and Hamilton just kind of running away.
Yeah. So Hamilton Wenham, I admittedly don't know as much about them collectively because they're a little outside of my area.
Yep.
However, I did get a chance to follow that game they played the other day. Newburyport and Hamilton Wenham played a real interesting game. If I could be wrong about this, but as it was explained to me, Hamilton Wenham was working on a no-hitter, and Newburyport actually took the lead on a bunch of errors, and it was a situation where Newburyport could have won the game despite getting no hit, which
would
have been just incredible. It didn't work out that way. Hamilton had a home run at the end of the game, and, you know, ended up winning in a really, really exciting game, but yeah, just very competitive. Those two teams are definitely the class of the league. And what's been a very, really competitive league, I should say, like across the board. I mean, every team seems like they've been in it,
mm-hmm,
more often than not. You know, it is really, I wouldn't say there's really a bottom feeder in the league this year. Not like by your usual definition,
well,
anyway.
let's go back to boys lacrosse for a minute, Mac, because you mentioned Newburyport at 8-1. But hello, Triton's knocking on the door at 8-1, and then in the Kinney, and then Ipswich in the Baker is at 9-0, and Glenn Foster's doing his usual thing down there.
Yeah, well, Ipswich is they have a really great program for many years now. Triton has been a great story. That team is awesome. their top guys, James Tatro and Jared Leonard, are just absolutely terrific offensive players. And, you know, they've really, well, Triton, one of the things they've really benefited from this year is Georgetown. They've united as a co-op program this year. So, you know, Triton on its own would have been pretty good. Georgetown on its own would have been, let's just say what they would have had, like, some really solid, really good players. It may have not have always translated to wins just because they wouldn't have had the depth necessarily. But you put those teams together, and it's just been, they've taken off like a rocket. They are, they've been absolutely fantastic. And they, Newburyport and Triton will have a game, I believe this Saturday, which it could end up being like a de facto league title game, mm-hmm. the way things are going. Mm-hmm. Unless, you know, obviously there's, you know, who knows what could happen in the meantime. But that's going to be definitely one of the games of the year for sure. That their first game on the season opener was an absolute barn burner. So I would expect this won't be any different.
All right, let's take a look at softball. North Reading 8-1 in the Kinney, but Linfield and Newburyport a couple of games out, both at 7-4 in the Kinney. But down in the Baker, Amesbury running away with it at 8-0. So how do you see softball?
Amesbury is just on another level this year. Amesbury is always really good. They are like they have for decades now have been just one of the league's powerhouses. This team is like. It's hard to describe how dominant they are,
okay.
But I'll try. They have two pitchers, Olivia DeLong and Alana Delisle, who this season have combined for three no-hitters in
wow.
those games. So, you know, yeah, that's what Jeez. We're working with here. DeLong has had two straight no-hitters and she started a game that Amesbury ended up winning like 24-1. So she had two no-hit innings to start that one before they pulled her because it was, you know, the game was over by that point. And, you know, it had a complete game shutout in her first game, too. So just, you know, between those two, you know, nobody's scoring on Amesbury, period.
What's,
Nobody has. Like, I think they've only allowed four runs all season. And then their offense is just crazy. Like, up and down the lineup, like, they already brought back, they had, like, four or five really good freshmen and a couple of really good sophomores 2 years ago. So they're all still there. And they've added like a bunch more really good underclassmen. It's unbelievable how good they are. They certainly are a favorite to go all the way. It's like I think St. Mary's is probably one of the only teams who
wow.
really imagine giving them a real challenge. But yeah, they've been special. You know, North Reading's really good, obviously. Newburyport has exceeded expectations. Triton, I think, has done really well. You know, a lot of these other teams have been very young and have almost completely new teams. So. You know, those teams they've got bright futures ahead of them, but Amesbury is in a class of their own.
The Amesbury pitcher you mentioned with a couple of no-hitters, is she a senior?
Junior.
Oh, okay.
Juniors.
Whoa, all right.
Most of their best players are juniors.
Oh, my goodness.
It's even crazier.
Yeah. So what do you think about a couple of things I would ask you about. One is the pitch count in baseball because – it doesn't seem to have affected anybody. Everybody seems to be handling that very well. And then the other thing, I totally lost my thought on. So let's go with the pitch count.
Yeah. So with pitch counts, I'll say that I am obviously coming at this from the perspective of an observer, somebody who watches the games, somebody who's following the games. I can't say that I've noticed any differences in just the way pitchers are necessarily being used. Like the guys who are starting games are generally pitching about as much as you'd expect. The relief pitches are appearing as often as you'd expect. As far as the in-game strategy, I'm not really qualified to speak on that, so you'd probably, you know, that might be a good question to ask some of the local coaches.
Oh, I do.
At least from the outside, it doesn't seem like it's had much of an effect on
right.
the outcomes of how these, you know, how pitches are being used, but I have no doubt that there's a lot of strategy being put into play, and for when the tournament starts, you're probably really going to start to see it, especially.
All right. Are you covering any major league sports during the summer?
Well, you know, the Patriots have training camp, so that's certainly a thing. You know, it's looking like it's going to be a really exciting season. I mean, they've added, like, every great free agent who was available, and then they drafted a quarterback in the first round. So that's certainly a recipe for some intrigue. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, well, beyond that, though, there's been, frankly, just a ton to catch up on with high school. Between the eight varsity spring sports that are normally happening, which is, you know, a whole other wrinkle. I've had plenty on my plate.
Well, you have such a large staff that you can send people to. I mean, you know, come on, you can take some time off, right?
That's not a factual statement.
No, I know. I'm kidding. Yeah, I know. Well, just wondering though. Just turning to the Patriots for a second, Mac. Your thoughts on all the transactions that they've made, because as a fan, as a total outsider, I'm very excited on the one hand. On the other hand, do you think it's within the realm of possibility they can be successful infusing so many new players all at the same time? Just maybe a guess on that.
Yeah, I wouldn't be worried about that. You know, Phil Belichick and his staff are, you know, well, turnover happens in the NFL every year, period. So it's nothing new for them. So there will be, that team will be ready to play. As far as how, like, the pieces will fit, I guess we'll have to see, because, you know, naturally these things can, you know, don't necessarily play out the way you'd expect. But I will say that last year's team was lacking in talent in a lot of key spots. That will not be the case this year. And then the other thing too, so Julio Jones was like the big flavor of the week recently. You know, were the Patriots going to trade for him? Obviously he would have helped. He was just traded to the Tennessee Titans, so that ship has sailed. But the thing that I think people need to understand is that, yes, the Patriots wide receiving core is maybe not like one of the best in the league. But now that they have two great tight ends, like they did back in the, you know, the beginning of the 2010s when they had, you know, Gronk and, you know, the other guy.
Yeah, the other guy, yep.
You know, when they had those guys, you look at that offense, though, you know, Gronk and Hernandez were a huge part of the offense. And the other pass catchers were Wes Welker, who caught a ton of passes, and Deion Branch, who was like the number two receiver and caught, you know, however many, you know, he was kind of the other guy who was a big factor. The third receiver was Chad Ochocinco. He caught like 15 passes all year.
Right, he was
not a factor. So right now, the Patriots receiving core, they have Hunter Henry, they have Jonnu Smith. Those guys are going to be, I don't think people appreciate just how much of an impact those guys are going to make. Like, they're really good. So you got those guys right off the start. And then you have, you know, Nelson Agholor is your burner down the sideline. He's like your, you know, Brandon, Lloyd or LaFell, you know, Randy Moss. I'm not comparing him to any of those guys, but that's kind of his role in the offense, to be the deep threat, the fast guy, you know, the guy you throw down to the sideline. And then you have, you know, Kendrick Bourne and Jacoby Myers can be sort of like that second receiver and, you know, do the slot thing, kind of be the other outside guy. And, you know, let's also not sleep on, you know, Gunnar Olszewski was just an all-pro punt returner.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know who else was an all-pro punt returner before he became a really good receiver? Was Julian Edelman.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, Olszewski is, I think, definitely a guy that people need to be, don't sleep on him either. It took Edelman like 5 years before he became Julian Edelman.
Right.
So, you know, that next great slot guy, like the Welker Edelman, Olszewski could be that. But obviously, it's probably still too soon. So, just saying, that's something to keep an eye on.
Very exciting, man. I'm really excited about that. Now, will you be going down to minicamp?
Hope so. Yeah, you know, it depends on if there's tournament games to cover, I guess. I think it's more likely I think we'll see how things go.
Yeah, okay.
You know, between work and, you know, just everything else going on, we'll kind of see how things play out. But I certainly anticipate being as involved as I can.
Well, you are involved, man. I appreciate that. Thank you for all of the comments and expertise tonight. I appreciate it in helping us get caught up on the Cape Ann League and the Patriots. Looking forward to your reports from Foxborough, as well as everything that's going on up there in the Newburyport area. Mac, I appreciate it, and stay well. And I'm going to bother you again in a couple of weeks, I suppose.
Of course. Happy to talk anytime.
Thank you, Mac. Take care.
All right. Have a good one. Bye.
That's Mac Cerullo, who is the sports editor at the Newburyport Daily News. I'm going to see if I can check in with Kearns now. He's somewhere, and we'll see if we can give him a call. So we'll be right back. This is North Shore Sports Night at MSO News Sports.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, I found Tim. I don't know where he is, but Tim, wherever you are, welcome.
Yeah, I'm sitting in my old spot, Rick. I'm sitting at the computer wondering, geez, why isn't he calling me?
Oh, okay. All right, well, all my signal's looking good here, so it's your computer, apparently, that's not hearing us. Cause... What's that?
I checked my speakers, but they seem to be working.
Yeah, right. No. Well, my signal looks good, and I just checked my my remote audio, and it looks like we're on the air. My meters are reading that we're on the air. The only thing I haven't checked is my phone, and I will in a minute. So, Tim, we're gonna check in with Mike Grenier first because Gary's gonna be available a little bit later on. So, what's on your sports mind right now?
Oh, God, what's on my...
Well, I got to ask your reaction to the fact that Hamilton Wenham canceled games today because it was too hot for the kids to play.
I can remember playing in some really hot weather as a little leaguer or a high school kid in college. No, season was pretty much over, but, you know, we played in summer leagues. We played in hot weather, you know, I think nowadays, Rick, unfortunately, with the litigiousness.
Yeah, I know. It's
litigious.
Litigious, yeah. Okay.
Of families, okay.
Okay.
Schools in certain communities just err on the side of caution, and they go, well, it's going to be really hot. These guys are going to have to stay super hydrated, and you do. But I remember playing in games and the sweat's dripping down my face. But, you know, no one thought, oh, well, if I get dehydrated, I'm going to sue the coach, I'm going to sue the league, I'm going to sue the school. Oh, you know, it was a part of playing the game. And I think that's what it was. Every school system just looking to avoid the lawsuit.
Well, I just think it's too bad because these kids have been boxed up so long. And I was just relating a story about the rain and how everybody had fun in the rain up in Rockport over the weekend. And I went to high school in Texas. I played baseball and football down in Texas. And I don't think it gets any hotter down there, up here than it does down there. But I don't know. I just was surprised that they canceled today. And I was in Essex earlier today. It was 96 degrees.
When I was leaving Gloucester this afternoon, I got that same reading in my truck on my thermometer. But I believe that is the reason. And rather than have a kid pass out, and all of a sudden you get the letter from the lawyer, schools are simply going to go, nope, I'm going to err on the side of caution. We'll cancel the game. We'll reschedule it, or they won't bother. And with the cramped schedule now, they may not be able to play.
Right. Well, all I know is this is doubleheader weather as far as I'm concerned. Man, this is just awesome. I love it. Tim, we're going to take a break here in a second, but I've got the Bruins. I'm recording them, so I don't know how they're doing right now, so don't tell me. But comment on the Red Sox. This is a fun team to watch.
Well, my complaint is, you know, and they're doing it with a sort of smoke and mirrors. I mean, you know, sweeping the Yankees, I'm not sure how much credence you can put into that because they're really bad right now. But they're getting it done, you know, and guys are stepping up, and you're getting the not your everyday hero coming up with a clutch hit or a big play. So, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with Cora and his ability to communicate with the players, their acceptance of the roles that they play. Not only and I don't know if you could even put, you know, quotation marks around who the hell the starters are. You know who they should be, you know, but he's not afraid to take a starter out, put another guy in. Even after like one or two games, okay, you're sitting today and so-and-so's in. It's like, what are you doing, you know? And, but he's playing mix and match, and he's getting results, you know? They're in second place, I think. They got the second best record in the league, and at least the American League.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't really squabble too much about what he's doing, you know?
And they're one game out, that's all.
And can they keep it up throughout the season?
Well, it'll be fun to watch. Hey, listen, I got a quick note here, and then we gotta go to Mike. I was reading a tweet from, I don't know if it was Peabody or Gloucester, but Gloucester softball is playing against Peabody today, and Abby Betancourt hit a home run against Gloucester, and it hit a car, and it broke whose windshield, do you think it broke?
Betancourt.
Yes, yes, it broke her dad's windshield. So, man, that's amazing. She's some athlete, and he's some coach, so pretty cool. Let's take a break here.
Did they beat Gloucester?
I don't know. They were down 5-2 late in the game, so I don't know what the final outcome was. All right, we'll be right back, Tim. Hold on.
Okay.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Yeah. All right, we're back with Tim out there in Never Never Land somewhere, but he is our co-host, Mike Grenier has joined us now. Mike, a sports journalist and involved in so many sports, but helping us out with NBA basketball. And Mike, I'm going to, before I turn it over to you and Tim, my thing is I'm not going to belabor the issue of the Celtics ouster. That was a foregone conclusion.
Right.
But your reaction to Danny leaving and Brad Stevens getting the job.
Well, first of all, before we even address that, I want to tell you how honored and privileged I feel to be going ahead of Gary Larrabee. On tonight's show. I mean, I cannot, it's such a privilege, and it's quite a burden for me to be his predecessor here.
Well, you're in the cleanup spot, so you gotta watch what you say now.
Yes, I know he's coming up right after this. We spoke today by phone and all that stuff. But yes, getting back to the Celtics, yeah, what a shocker. And I was not surprised in one sense because, you know, overall they finished 37-40, you know, when you count the playoffs. But to me, equally as shocking, maybe more shocking, is the fact that the Lakers lost in six games. Reigning champions. Yeah, Anthony Davis got hurt, but quite a bit of talent still in that team. And it's hard to believe that the Celtics and the Lakers combined won a total of three playoff games.
Wow.
Three playoff games. You would not have expected that going into the season, certainly with the talent, the veteran talent that the Lakers had and the young talent that the Celtics had. So surprising developments happen every year. It wasn't a good year for either team, and of course we're more concerned about the Celtics. They're our home team here. So the point is now they made some kind of startling changes less than 24 hours after they lost, announcing that Danny Ainge was, quote, retiring, although I'm not buying that entirely. I think he might have been pushed out the door, although he's had health issues. And Brad Stevens moving into that position so quickly with no experience, you know, director of player operations, general manager, will be in charge of acquiring players, hiring the coach, and all that stuff. So it's very, very intriguing what's going on with that team right now.
Tim, you with us?
Yeah, I agree, Mike. You know, it's almost like that plan for the Celtics the decisions had been made, and they were just waiting for the season to end.
Right.
And once it ended, they simply made the move.
Yeah.
Obviously, there had to be a lot of unhappy people up in the front office amongst the ownership.
Yeah.
And they knew it wasn't going well this year. They knew they had to do something. Are they hoping that the management shakeup, getting Brad off of the coaching sideline, getting Danny out of the building, you know, is that going to shake these players up enough that they suddenly begin to perform?
Right.
I think Brad's got the toughest act because he's having seen and coached these players. He's now going to make the call who's going, and then potentially who's coming in.
Right, right. And now the logical extension to that, right, Tim, is the next hire, the one that Brad Stevens will have to make with the blessing of the upper management, is who do you hire as coach? It's so critically important right now because they're still a young team. And, you know, obviously, I think the biggest question mark in the offseason as far as players are concerned, what do you do with Kemba Walker, who is owed 2 years and over $70 million? And he's a hurting puppy. You know, he missed 29 games, has knee issues. He's just 30, 31 years old. So how do you – that's kind of seen as an albatross of a contract with 2 years. But yet we've seen teams in the past with seemingly burdensome contracts, really heavy-duty contracts. You say, how is the team ever going to get rid of them? But however, there always seems to be deals that can be made. You trade one bad contract for another. Matter of fact, I saw a scenario where the Celtics would get rid of Kemba Walker's contract, and the Celtics would take on Kristaps Porzingis, who was 7'4", by the way, plays for the Dallas Mavericks, and was originally seen as someone who would work well with Luka Doncic, but it didn't work out. Obviously, Mavericks lost in the seventh game to the Clippers yesterday, but Porzingis is a legitimate talent, only 25 years old, and the reason that Dallas may want to get rid of him is that he's got 3 years left at $105 million on his contract, and he doesn't seem to mesh well with Luka Doncic, and their relationship is not the best. So, you know, Doncic would probably appreciate a player like Kemba Walker better, because Kemba is a playmaker, and Doncic could average 40 points a game, and the Celtics would gladly welcome him. And Tim, you often mention a big man. Porzingis is 7'3", and he mostly shoots from outside, but he could be an inside presence that the Celtics need, especially with the unhealthy status or the uncertain status of Robert Williams, who is seen as the center of the future. Great talent, but he has not been able to be a stable presence in the lineup because of injuries. So I don't know. That's kind of like an interesting possible, you know, trade there or something along those lines, where the Celtics would get rid of Kemba Walker and welcome a 7'3" guy in Kristaps Porzingis, who can average 20-25 points a game easily.
Yeah, you know, I just always cringe when I hear guys who are 7'3" and they want to hang around the 3-point arc.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, God gave you that height to be an inside player. Get in there. You know,
exactly.
Because there aren't many guys that do it. So if you're one of the few guys that's willing to go in there, you are going to have a 25-point average.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to average double-digit rebounds simply because you're going to be nearer to the ball.
Right, exactly. Well, who knows? That's a speculation trade. But more interestingly or more importantly, who do they get as their number one pick here? Who's their number one pick? Or let's say their number one visual, who do they envision as their top head coaching candidate? And quite frankly, the names I've seen, some of them are not that impressive, either because they haven't won much or they've had no NBA coaching experience at the head coaching level. Now, two guys who've had that experience, Tim, and you've probably seen the name Ricks as well, and we're familiar with Jason Kidd, number one. You know, he's been on Frank Vogel's staff with the Lakers for a couple of seasons. They won a title last year, and he has head coaching experience with both the Nets and the Bucks about a total of 4 years, and it's about a 500 record. He's probably got the most coaching experience, head coaching experience, of any candidate out there. And also, too, I think he's a guy, as you know, roster building has changed like the last few years where, NBA players want to go to teams that have a potential of winning it right away. That's why the Nets built a super team. The Celtics are going along with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and those are good foundation pieces, but maybe it's time to try to lure a couple of veteran free agents to go with those core pieces. Jason Kidd is an attractive enough head coaching name where he might be able to lure some veteran free agents to the Celtics. Another name that's been mentioned is Sam Cassell, who's with Doc Rivers in Philadelphia. And, of course, Philadelphia's had a great year, although they lost to the Atlanta Hawks yesterday in Game 1. And Sam Cassell played with the Celtics the year they won it all in 2008. He's built his resume as an assistant coach, and he might be ready for a head coaching job if Jason Kidd doesn't want to come here. Mm-hmm. So The other names I've seen, I mean, they're talking about this guy, Lloyd Pierce, who was with the Atlanta Hawks for a couple of years, head coach. He had a record of 63-120. 63-120, it's being mentioned. And the reason the Atlanta Hawks took off this year is when they fired Lloyd Pierce and hired Nate McMillan, and now Atlanta looks like one of the best teams in the NBA. I mean, they won 5 games over the Knicks, a 5-game series, and they beat the Philadelphia 76ers on their home floor, on Philly's home floor yesterday. Rising young team with Trae Young and a lot of good young players there.
Yeah, that was, you know, their youthfulness plays with a whole different bravado than the Celtics, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they do. Trae Young is playing fearlessly. The guy looks like he weighs about 74 pounds, but he gets you 35, 36 points. He makes 8 or 9 three-pointers. He's the definite leader on that team. And they have other great Capella, kind of a veteran big man. Tim, you love the big man. He's the ideal. He's a low-post player, a classic low-post player. They don't go to him for, like, little short jumpers, but he makes dunks. He gets offensive rebounds. He gets you 15, 16 rebounds. Ideal big man for a young team that likes to shoot threes and make threes. Atlanta Hawks are a very dangerous team in these playoffs.
Right. The old
usage of the big man, you know, there aren't many big guys out there that want to get down there and contest anyways.
That's correct.
You know,
that's
so you're basically on an island to yourself once you're in that low paint.
Yep. I'm sorry, Rick, did you want to add?
Well, I just want to say that I hope there's one guy that they don't move. Obviously, you know, Tatum is the superstar.
Right.
Brown is the intellect, and he's also a budding superstar. But,
no doubt.
You know, to me, the quintessential Boston Celtic is Marcus Smart. And for
right.
whatever his foibles are, he's a Celtic.
Well, yeah, and you know, it's an interesting topic that you bring up there, Rick, because he's on the final year of, I remember when he signed the deal, 4 years, $52 million, which these days looks cheap, $13 million a year. But he's going to be on an expiring contract next year. So will the Celtics want to keep him, and then if he has a good year, sign him to an extension? Very interesting there. I like him as a defensive presence, and obviously as long as he doesn't go crazy taking three-pointers, he can be a very valuable piece for the Celtics. But, you know, I think they're going to make him a priority in the offseason and make Evan Fournier, who is, I believe, a restricted free agent. He can go anywhere he wants. The Celtics could match his deal. He's a free agent that the Celtics will want to keep because Ainge acquired him just before at the trade deadline to be a future Celtic. And they're talking about maybe he's at the right age, kind of in his prime, 28 years old. He can average anywhere, really, from 18 to 22 points a game. A little bit of a Gordon Hayward type player without the injuries.
All right, we got a couple of minutes left. So how about you and Tim handicap the rest of the playoffs for us?
Well, you know, I tell you, I love the way, I think the Utah Jazz are playing great in the West. They have a great chance to go on and move on into the finals. In the East, Tim, what do you think? Philadelphia, obviously, even though they lost yesterday, they have a well-rounded team. Embiid, although he was supposedly a question mark with injuries, scored 39 points yesterday. And, of course, we have to consider the dreaded Brooklyn Nets with Kyrie Irving and Harden, who was out for tonight's game against the Milwaukee Bucks, and we have to consider the Milwaukee Bucks a contender, too. I guess Brooklyn would have to be the favorite in the East.
Yeah, I just hate conceding to Brooklyn and Kyrie.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, boy, I really want to go for Milwaukee. You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, me too. Yeah.
And the thing is, they've been the team on the rise now.
Yep.
For the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
When are they going to get to that level?
Right,
you know,
exactly.
It's like they just keep coming up short. Is it because they're lacking a player? There's something in the team's makeup? Can't figure it out, but boy, they're such a good team. Everybody fears them all season long. And then they get to the playoffs and it's,
Yeah, exactly. Tremendous all around team. Giannis is a dominant figure. Chris Middleton is an all-star. Drew Holiday, who they acquired this year, is a great player. Bobby Porter's coming off the bench is a terrific three-point shooter. They have more depth and more frontline talent, I think, than any team in the NBA. But what teams have done against Giannis in the previous season is defensively they built a wall. In other words, they won't let him navigate through three players. They triple-team him and force him to get rid of the ball. And he hasn't figured out a way of, or the coach, Mike Budenholzer, has not figured out a way to cut him loose and turn him loose for the playoffs for those big games. So, I'd love to see Milwaukee rise to the top and beat this Brooklyn team in this round that we're currently playing right now, as a matter of fact, about to start game two. And, Rick,
now,
if we can add a, go ahead, I'm sorry, Tim.
Did I see it correctly that there's like eight teams in the playoffs, or of the eight teams left, six have never won a championship?
That sounds right, because obviously the Lakers got knocked off. That sounds about right. That's why we're going to have, it's going to be fun to watch this to see which team that has never won it before can make a run at it. Even a team like Denver, with Jokic at the center, MVP guy, it could make a strong run at it. So there's a lot of really good teams out there. It's going to be fun to watch. Rick, if I can throw a local name in there, our friend from former Peabody High coach Rick Weitzman, played with Bill Russell after playing at Brookline High and Northeastern University, is coming out with a book on his basketball experience.
Oh, cool.
Which, of course, you know, includes playing with Russell for 1 year and winning a championship. And, of course, he was a Celtics scout for about 15 years. And definitely from my level, and Rick, you know, he was a coach at Peabody High for a long time.
Yeah.
Some really good teams at Peabody High School. Really a likable guy. And I'm sure he has had a rich basketball life that he could write about.
Met him a long time ago, and I'm glad you brought that up. And it's fun doing this because, as I told Tim sometime, there was one time when I thought, God, it'd be fun to get on a train or a plane ride with Don Zimmer, you know, from one venue to another, you know, between games, and just listen to him talk baseball. And someone like Rick Weitzman, it's the same thing.
Absolutely. You know, maybe this is a conversation for another day, because I know you want to move on to the great Gary Larrabee.
Yeah, we got to get him on.
Yes, but John Zimmer, some other time, he had a confrontation with me at spring training over a story I wrote about Carlton Fisk.
No way.
It's a very interesting story. He eventually apologized to me, but it's a funny story which we can reserve for another day.
All right, and so you're saying that you do have some respect for him then?
Oh, no question.
Awesome.
No question. It was a professional tiff, and we ironed it out.
All right. Oh yeah, save that for next week, man. Yes. That's great, Mike.
I got to give you this tip, and I just saw on ESPN. The Navy will not let cornerback Cameron Kinley delay commission to play for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. How long before Tom Brady gets on the phone to Biden and pleading his case? Like, come on, now he's playing for me.
Yeah, that's good. Listen, I know you have to move on to Larry, but please tell him I said hello, and I apologize if I took up any of his...
Not at all. All right. We'll talk to you next week, Mike. Be well.
Bye-bye. Yeah.
Thank you, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
All right, that's Mike Grenier, sports journalist. Tim will take a quick break, and I'll see if I can bag Gary here. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore with Tim Kearns, and we will get back in here in just a minute if I can find the right buttons to push, so stay with us.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, back now with Gary Larrabee and Tim Kearns. And, Gary, we switched the batting order here as Mike Grenier batted cleanup just a few minutes ago, and he said, get out there and get a hit. Welcome back. And before I turn it over to you guys, tell me a little bit about that bizarre thing on Friday and Saturday when the leader of one of the tournaments had a huge lead and he had to withdraw because of a COVID test or something like that.
Yeah, John Rahm, who was the defending champion of this tournament, he won it last year. Later in the year, the Memorial Jack Nicklaus's tournament out of Muirfield Village in Dublin, Ohio. Correct me if I'm wrong, Tim, I think he shot 65 or 66 in the third round to take a six-stroke lead.
Yeah.
After the third round, but as he was walking off the 18th green with a six-shot lead entering the final day in Las Vegas was not going to take any wages on that because he was the absolute lock to win the next day. He was informed by PGA Tour officials that he had tested positive for the COVID-19 within the last 24 hours, I believe, and he was ruled ineligible to continue playing in the Memorial, where I believe first place prize was like $1.4 million.
Mm.
And he really showed emotion for a lot of different reasons. He didn't know he'd be tested positive. He'd been tested negative for several days leading up to the start of the tournament on Thursday. But it's a subtle reminder, and a very powerful reminder, I should say, that the COVID-19 is still around and still can get to us.
Exactly. Yeah, he tested positive in the morning, and then they redid the test later in the day, and they got the results just as he finished, and those came back positive as well. So that's why they had to inform him that he was no longer eligible to play. They wanted to make sure that it wasn't a false positive in the morning.
And I'm sure he doesn't want to be given any blame or looked as a guilty party here, but we should not be concerned about him missing out on winning maybe $1.4 million. He has a private plane. he's a multi-gazillionaire. He's a terrific player. We're still waiting for him to win a major. Now, his name is Rahm, but he is from Spain. Isn't that correct, Tim?
I believe you are correct, Gary.
And one of the top 10 players in the world, no question, the last few years. So we'll see where it goes for him from here. We think he'll be okay as long as he tests negative the next time he has a scheduled test. And again, he'll have a test the week of the U.S. Open. He'll be the favorites to win out in San Diego, which I believe is now in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that was just an incredible story to come across the wire. And you're right, he was very emotional once he had received the news, and of course, being the leader at the time, all cameras were fixated on him, and everybody watching got to see the expression of the emotion coming through.
Well, excuse me, Tim, but I had never heard of the guy. Sorry, guys. But he's ranked number 3 in the world.
Yeah, he's a great player. He's a great player, and we're just waiting for him to win a major. Because leaving John Rahm for a moment, that made Colin Morikawa, one of my favorite players out on the tour, former PGA champion.
Mm-hmm.
He's only been on the tour 3 years. He won the tournament at the Memorial, preceding the Memorial last year. Because of the pandemic, they held a PGA Tour event 2 weeks in a row at Nicklaus's Golf Course at the Memorial. Morikawa won it the week before the Memorial, which Rahm won. Now we fast forward to this year, and Morikawa is in the final group, playing all day, tied with the lead going into the final round with Patrick Cantlay, who won this tournament, I believe, I think it was 3 years ago or 2 years ago. And of course, Cantlay won the showdown yesterday in a playoff on the first extra hole, which is still historic in its own right. But it wasn't the same kind of history that we thought we were going to get at the end of the day on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
before the disqualification of Rahm. We have to be reminded, guys, that this COVID-19 is still hanging around. It can still kill people. It's killed millions and millions of people worldwide. And people who don't take it seriously could be doomed down the road.
Well, you know, I saw the news in the Salem news on Friday that 4,300 people in Massachusetts have tested positive despite having both vaccination shots.
Yep. So it's
it's out there, and just because you've been vaccinated does not mean you're going to escape it if you are in a certain setting or you're exposed to it in an unusually one of the other variants comes around. So, you know, people just think, oh, well, vaccinated, I'm okay, let's walk around and everything is normal. Well, you know, like you said, Gary, it's still here and it's not going away anytime soon.
No, the other big story, because over the weekend, was a Philippine teenager no one would have given her a ghost of a chance to win the U.S. Women's Open this weekend at the Olympic Club out in San Francisco, did in fact win the U.S. Women's Open. Yuko Sasso from the Philippines, 19. She became the youngest winner of the U.S. Women's Open, along with NB Park from Korea. And I don't know how many years this has been, but it's been a long time. Well, no, maybe it's been 5 years, maybe, since Brittany Lang won the Women's Open, that an American has won it, because we thought we had a winner teeing off in the last group yesterday with Lexi Thompson, who everyone loved when she played the Curtis Cup back in 2010 at Essex County Club in Manchester. But Lexi truly spit the bit on that back nine yesterday. She was leading, I believe, with 9 holes to go, and she shot 41 the back nine, and she left a 10-foot putt on the last hole, which would have got him into a playoff with the young lady from Japan, as well as with Sasso, and she left the putt short. So a very disappointing day for Thompson, but a big day for the Filipino, and another case, guys, where the foreigners are, in many respects, in control and in charge of the U.S. Women's Open over the last 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, but Lexi's doing okay with the commercials, Gary. So, you know, she missed a payday, big payday here, but I'm sure she'll cash that check from the investment firm.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. One more thing to talk about, guys. On a local basis, we had the Massachusetts amateur qualifying round today at Tedesco over in Marblehead. And a name from the recent past, Mark Turner, from Bass Rocks Gloucester, a junior, I believe, at Dartmouth, who several years ago qualified for the U.S. Junior Championship on the West Coast. He's back in the news. He was the medalist today at Tedesco, shooting a 169. And that hot, hot weather, but it probably wasn't quite as hot since Tedesco's just down the street from Phillips Beach in Swampscott. But congratulations to Mark Turner. We'll be looking to see how we can extend his fine play at the Mass Amateur in July. Joe Cunningham from Essex finished second at 70. Brad Tufts from the home club made the grade, tying for third at 72 with John Gilmartin from Indian Ridge. Hunter Stone, also from Tedesco, tied for sixth with 73, along with clubmate George Zalotis at 73. So Tedesco will be well represented at the Mass Amateur next month. The other qualifier locally was Chuck Weishi from the Meadow. He shot 74 and made the grade as well. Missing the making it, though, guys, was Roger Tufts, Brad's brother at Tedesco, who we talked about last week after he shot 72 in the Mass Open qualifier at Kernwood, and Max Emmerich from Kernwood shot 80 and he missed the grade. So that'll be one fewer Emmerich brothers. There'll only be two playing in Mass Amateur, not three. But an exciting day at Tedesco and lots more great golf to look forward to, guys.
All right. What about, the feature this week? You got a column coming up?
I do, in fact. And, we're going to be going back, looking back 15 years. I love to look back at history, a little bit of North Shore golf history, and talking about one of the great performances in the history of the New England PGA Championship, arguably the greatest performance by a North Shore club professional, when Frank Deli from Kernwood won the 2006 New England PGA at Turner Hill in Ipswich, shooting a 10 under par, 206, shooting a 66 in the final run and winning the tournament, guys, by, take a deep breath, 11 strokes.
Okay. Well, that's going to be fun. We'll check that out, hopefully, at the end of the week in the Salem News and, of course, followed up by the Gloucester Times. Gary, we'll do it again next week. I presume you'll be batting cleanup again.
I look forward to it.
Thank you so much, Gary.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Thanks, Gary.
All right, that's Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer, and Tim, final thoughts here as we move on.
I'm waiting with bated breath for the Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers face-off on the golf course. Let's really see who the man is.
All right. That's Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, Bill Newell always helping out. I'm Rick Moore. This has been North Shore Sports Night. Please let us know what you think at msonewsports@gmail.com and spread the word. On behalf of all those guys, I am Rick Moore once again. Thank you for joining us. This is MSONewsports.com.